Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Teddy Bear Drive. The University of Texas Permian Basin Social Work Club is hosting a fundraiser to buy teddy bears for the UTPB Police and Odessa Fire Rescue to give to children in crisis situations. The club is on a mission to give back to the community and choose to donate teddy bears to first responders as they can offer a small sign of hope to children. The club will be taking donations until November 22nd. To donate, visit https://www.utpb.edu/universityoffices/advancement/donate to UT Permian Basin. Be sure to specify that the money is for the Social Work Fund. The club will be hosting a fundraising event from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. November 20th, selling sacks with supplies donated by Tropical Stop. All proceeds will go toward the teddy bear goal.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, November 7th. Midland voters play key role in Trump's win. The story was written by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. Former President Donald Trump is set to serve a second term after major news outlets called the election in his favor early Wednesday and opponent Kamala Harris conceded in the afternoon. Midlanders did their part to see the Republican candidate be reelected, with 46,601 people casting their vote, just shy of 80% of all ballots cast in the county for president, according to unofficial election results from the Midland County Elections Office. Harris was a distant second in all but a few voting precincts and was the top vote-getter by a narrow margin in precinct 305 and 306, which are generally located in southeast Midland. Out here in the heart of the Permian Basin, oil and gas are of high economic concern, and Trump's support of the industry was met with positively. Quote, "He takes oil and gas seriously," said freshly re-elected Railroad Commissioner Christy Craddock. "He gets the importance of the industry, and we appreciate that," adding that the new Trump administration may treat the national oil and gas industry with more common sense and offer access to funding. Craddock says she looks forward to working with the president-elect again. Quote, "You could tell while he was on the campaign trail that he realizes how important oil and gas is." James Beacham, chairman of the Midland County Republican Party, shared similar sentiments. Quote, "If you listened to Donald Trump's victory speech last night, we factored prominently when he was talking about oil and gas, so I think it's super to have someone in the White House who understands domestic energy," he said. The Trump victory, however, is larger than fossil fuels. Quote, "To a large extent, one of the great appeals of Trump is that he's not a conventional person who does things the way they've always been done," Beacham said. Continuing the quote, "As we look at America today, we have massive debt. The inflation under the Biden administration is absolutely horrendous. You can't spend your way to prosperity. It just doesn't work," end quote. Aside from the economic distress felt by many average Americans, Beacham said Trump's position on border security was a major factor to his success on Election Day. Quote, "People I talk to want a semblance of stability at our borders," he said. "We have to have healthy immigration, but you have to have security, stability, and managed resources well. It's not that Republicans are haters. You simply need to have control of the border," end quote. Midland County Republican Women President Karen Wood quoted Sue Brennan, a former County Republican Party chairman and MCRW founder who recently passed away, quote, "It's a great day to be a Republican in Midland, Texas. And I'll add that it's a great day to be a Republican in the United States of America," Hood said. In a statement on behalf of MCRW, Hood said, quote, "We've just witnessed the greatest political comeback that we have ever seen. This one will go down in history. We are so blessed and thankful that God chose to give our nation another chance," end quote. Hood continued, "Worries of open borders, gone. Worries of hyper-liberal lawlessness, gone. Hope for our country's prosperity has been renewed. No matter what you think about Donald Trump, he does what he says," end quote. For John Burkholder, who won an at-large city council seat Tuesday, the results show that the people's voice was heard. Quote, "The results are very reflective of how the country feels and how we want things to be fixed," he told the Reporter-Telegram. In reflecting on the intensity of the election night, quote, "I thought it would be more of a nail-biter," said Steve Vallela, who won his Midland County Commissioner race for Precinct 3. "With their votes, Midlanders clearly said what they want from the White House," end quote. Incumbent New Faces Secure Board Seats. The story was written by Kesley Salinas. The Midland Independent School District Board of Trustees has 7 seats, 4 of which were up for grabs during Tuesday's general election. Districts 1, 2, 4, and 7 each had contested races for the school board seats, with incumbents Michael Booker, Robert Marquez, and Brian Murray running for re-election. Vice President Katie Joyner opted not to run again. Here is a recap of the unofficial election results for the MISD Board of Trustees. District 1. According to unofficial voting results, Booker won the seat as District 1 trustee with 54% of the vote and a total of 2,384 ballots cast. The other District 1 candidates included Denise Norman, who captured 23% of the vote and a total of 1,029 ballots cast, and Courtney J. Ratliff with 22% of the vote with 978 ballots cast. Quote, "The first 4 years of my election term was a learning process," Booker said. "I'm ready to put that learning to work for MISD." Booker added that he ran for re-election because he wanted to finish what he started in his first term with the bond and wanted to continue to push for positive changes at MISD. Quote, "I want to thank the constituents of District 1 for trusting me and re-electing me for the Midland ISD School Board," Booker said. In a social media post, Booker extended his gratitude to his opponents for running a clean and respectful race. The Reporter-Telegram was not able to reach Norman for comment. However, Ratliff provided a statement about the unofficial election results. Quote, "I want to offer my congratulations to Michael Booker," he told the Reporter-Telegram. "I called him after the last polling location posted the results and personally congratulated him. Michael is a good guy, and we have always been good friends, and that will not change. As far as the race, I did the best I could do and will continue to push for positive changes. Midland is not seeing the last of me yet. I'm proud to remain at my school, making an impact on young people's lives. The people of Midland have spoken, and there is a lot of change happening at the MISD School Board. We are moving forward and will continue doing so. I want to thank everyone who supported me during this election," end quote. District 2. Angel Hernandez defeated incumbent Robert Marquez for the MISD Board of Trustees District 2 race. According to unofficial election results, Hernandez won 65% of the vote, with 1,913 total ballots cast. Marquez received 34% of the vote and 1,024 ballot votes. The Reporter-Telegram was unable to reach either candidate for comments about the unofficial election results. District 4. Matt Fries was elected as District 4 trustee, according to unofficial election results. Fries took 53% of the vote, with a total of 3,673 ballots cast, while his opponent, Emily Staten Smith, took 46% of the vote, with 3,156 ballots cast. The Reporter-Telegram was initially unable to reach either candidate for comments about the unofficial election results, but both candidates posted statements on their Facebook campaign pages. Quote, "I am somber and solemn about the electoral process and still processing the results," Fries said in a Facebook post on Wednesday. "I am excited to win, but also am disappointed for a very good candidate who would be a great school board trustee, Emily Staten Smith. She is a great Midlander, has a wonderful family and extended family, ran an admirable and tough campaign, and is as good a person to have in leadership of any kind across Midland as we can offer. I hope she runs again for something again, and I will likely support her if she does. Because of this, I will work extra hard and do the best possible job I can for our kids, teachers, MISD organization, and community. Thank you to everyone who supported me or also held and will hold me accountable. I am not anywhere near perfect and will make many mistakes and will need everyone's help to be a successful board member." End quote. Staten Smith posted to her Facebook page and said, quote, "I want to offer my congratulations to Matt Fries. Serving on the school board is such a significant task, and I'm cheering him on as he steps into this role. To each of you who supported, encouraged, and helped along the way, thank you. We're not done showing up for our kids and our schools." End quote. District 7. Joshua A. Gwynn unseated incumbent Brian Murray as District 7 trustee, according to unofficial election results. Gwynn captured 53% of the vote, with a total of 3,948 ballots cast, and Murray received 46% of the vote, with a total of 3,393. The Reporter-Telegram was unable to reach either candidate for comment Tuesday night. Quote, "I want to take a moment to say thank you to Brian Murray for serving our community, students, teachers, and District 7 for the past 8 years, Gwynn said Wednesday morning through his Facebook page. "Thank you to your family for sacrificing time with you to be able to do so. Good luck in this next chapter. Congratulations to all the new and re-elected school board trustees. Now let's get to work." End quote. Murray posted the following statement on his Facebook page. Quote, "District 7 and all of MISD, it's been a true honor to serve you for 7.5 years. I walk away with my head up knowing I worked hard and served from the heart. I know there are good things in store for MISD. I want to congratulate Josh and wish him the best going forward. Thank you all for allowing me to serve." End quote. Two newcomers to join council. The story was written by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. The dais in council chambers will look a little bit different in the coming months. Longtime city councilman Scott Dufford, who represents District 1, opted to not run for re-election opening the door for a new face to fill a familiar seat. Plus, there was the four-contender race for two at-large council positions, which after Tuesday's general election saw a newcomer take victory. Quote, "I am appreciative for all of the votes I received and am appreciative of the people who believe in me," said John Burkholder, who captured the most votes in the at-large race. Burkholder collected 17,764 votes, the most of any at-large candidate, according to unofficial results from the Midland County Elections Office. Quote, "It's time to go to work for Midland," end quote. Incumbent Robin Poole followed in vote tally with 15,656, making her re-election campaign successful. Quote, "I'm really grateful for the people of Midland for putting their trust in me for another 3 years," she told the Reporter-Telegram. Incumbent Eric Davidson will roll off the council after collecting 13,094 votes, which put his tally at the third highest. Davidson joined city council this year after winning a special election in May, called for after the untimely death of Dan Corrales in January. Rance C. Norton placed fourth in the at-large race with 8,142 votes. Also joining the dais will be Brian Stubbs, who handily won the District 1 spot with 7,847 votes, or 71% of the vote, over Heather Bredemus, who had 3,189 votes, or 29%. Quote, "I'm proud Midland came out and voted," Stubbs told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview. He said he is very honored to be elected and looks forward to being part of the community and addressing issues and finding solutions. Incumbent John Norman of District 1 ran unopposed and was re-elected. Stephen Vieira defeats incumbent Luis Sanchez. The story was written by B.K. Richter. Midland County Republican Stephen Vieira defeated his Democratic incumbent Luis Sanchez in the race for Midland County Commissioner for Precinct 3 during Tuesday's general election. According to unofficial voting results, Vieira took 61% of the vote with a total number of 4,417 ballots cast. Democrat opponent and incumbent commissioner Luis Sanchez captured 38% of the vote with a total of 2,805 ballots cast. Vieira said his top concern for his campaign was bringing clean water into the county. While Texas counties cannot operate water districts, he said he wants to lead the way for one to be created. Quote, "Can I do this within the next 3 years?" "Probably not," Vieira said. "But creating a water district in Midland County is something that I want," end quote. Regarding his win over his opponent, Vieira said connecting with voters in Precinct 3 was critical to his success. Quote, "I think people were ready for a change," he told the Reporter-Telegram. "There's a lot of things we want to see changed, and continuous communication is going to be critical," end quote. Another election topic was the prospect of a county-owned golf course. Vieira says he is conflicted. Quote, "We're a young community, and we need fun things for families to do. However, we need to make sure we take care of our needs before our wants," he said. "We want a golf course, but we need water. We need roads. We need a well-functioning sheriff's office," end quote. Commissioner Sanchez did not immediately respond to requests by the Reporter-Telegram for comment. Midland County Constable Race. For the Precinct 3 Midland County Constable Race, Republican Jerry Cook II unseated the Democrat incumbent Larry Woodruff. According to the unofficial voting results, Cook secured 60% of the vote with a total of 4,291 ballots cast. Democratic opponent Larry Woodruff captured 39% of the vote with a total of 2,858 ballots cast. Cook thanked all the supporters and said that he couldn't wait to serve not only his community, but also his precinct. Quote, "I just want to thank everyone for putting up with all the political signs," he said. "I have never been a politician. I have been in law enforcement for more than 20 years. End quote. Cook reflected that his campaign was a learning experience, but said he hopes to make everyone who supported him during the campaign proud. Quote, "I want to make a difference in my precinct and community," he told the Reporter Telegram late Tuesday evening. Woodruff also commented on the race saying, quote, "It's not looking good for me right now, but may the best man win," end quote. He added that when he took office more than 6 years ago, he understood his job of serving the papers that require residents to attend their court dates. Quote, "I want to thank all my supporters," he told the Reporter Telegram. "I want to thank everyone who came out and supported me during the past years," end quote. For the additional uncontested Midland County Constable races for Precincts 1, 2, and 4, Douglas Brown, Precinct 1, received 10,560 ballots cast. Scott Caspier, Precinct 2, received 15,724, and Jamie J.B. Hall, Precinct 4, received 15,653. For the county's uncontested races, Midland County Attorney Russell Malm received a total of 47,927 votes. Midland County Sheriff David Kreiner tallied 47,986. Running unopposed, Mary Helen Bowers was elected as the Midland County Tax Assessor Collector. Additionally, Charles Hall was elected as Precinct 1 Midland County Commissioner, receiving 10,275 votes. Editorial Director Trevor Hawes contributed to this report. Cal Hendrick defeats incumbent Javier Hoven. The story was written by B.K. Richter. On Tuesday, Cal Hendrick defeated the incumbent Javier Hoven in the City of Odessa mayoral race. According to the unofficial Ector County election results, Hendrick took 66% of the vote with a total number of 19,259 votes. Hoven captured 33% of the vote with a total number of 9,676 ballots cast. In Midland County, where the City of Odessa extends, Hendrick also showed a majority of support over Hoven. Hendrick took 81% of the vote with a total number of 1,417 votes. Hoven showed 18% with 324 votes. For the Odessa City Council at-large seat, the unofficial results for Ector County show the incumbent Denise Swanner lost to Craig Stoker. Stoker received 55% of the vote with a total number of 15,375 ballots cast. Swanner captured 44% of the vote with a total number of 12,157 ballots cast. In Midland County, Stoker received 64% of the vote with a total number of 1,055 ballots cast. Swanner took 35% of the vote with 573 ballots cast. Stoker said that for his race against Swanner, for him, it was all about how well people had done their jobs. Quote, "For those who weren't satisfied, I spent several months presenting my case for an opportunity to do that job," he told the Reporter Telegram. Additionally, Stoker commented on the good things about Odessa. Quote, "I see the potential we have here," he said. "We have the ability to build our own businesses and create things that are unique to our area. When you look at where we are on the map, we're in the middle of nowhere. We've had to adapt as a community because no one is coming to save us. We've learned to take care of ourselves and take care of each other, particularly through nonprofits." End quote. Another Odessa council seat in District 1 resulted in an upset where Eddie Mitchell overtook incumbent Mark Mata. Mitchell captured 61% of the vote with a total number of 2,921 ballots cast in Ector County. Mata showed 38% of the vote with a total number of 1,804 ballots cast. Midland County residents did not vote in this race, so no voting results were recorded. For the Odessa City Council District 2, incumbent Stephen Thompson defeated his opponent, Nayeli Urias. Thompson received 57% of the vote, with a total number of 3,785 ballots cast in Ector County. Urias received 42% of the vote, with a total number of 2,821 ballots cast. In Midland County, those results were echoed, with Thompson showing 61% of the vote, with 978 ballots cast, and Urias showing 38% of the vote, with a total number of 616 ballots cast. Odessa College's $355 million bond did not pass in the November 5th general election. In Ector County, 19,137 ballots voted for the education initiative, and approximately 20,542 ballots voted against the measure. Residents of Midland County could not vote for this bond. The bond would have funded parts of the Vision 2030 plan. Editorial Director Trevor Hawes contributed to this report. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, November 7th. We celebrate the memory of Corey Deshaun Adams, born in 1985 in Houston, Texas, to Miss Martha Renee Jackson and Mr. Anthony T. Adams, along with his stepmother, Mrs. Terry Adams. Corey was a beloved husband to Dr. Brittany D. Adams, father to Madison Caitlin Adams, son, brother, uncle, nephew, and friend. On October 25th, Corey passed away, leaving a legacy of love, dedication, and friendship that touched all who had the pleasure to know him. Growing up in Midland, Texas, Corey attended Robert E. Lee High School and graduated with the class of 2003. He went on to attend Prairie View A&M University, where Corey completed both a bachelor's degree in accounting and a master's of science degree in accounting, setting the stage for a promising career in his field. Corey was preceded to death by his bonus father, Anthony Tyrone Brazell, his cherished Nana, Mary Sis Washington, his beloved aunt, Latifa Jamala Johnson, grandfather Booker T. Lott, Sr., and his great-grandfather, Sherman Big Daddy Jones, Jr. We invite family and friends to join us as we honor Corey's life and legacy. Viewing will be Thursday, November 7th, between 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. at Singing Hills Funeral Home in Dallas, Texas. Funeral service will be on Friday, November 8th, at Concord Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. Savannah Corrine Calloway, beloved daughter and partner, born August 7, 2002 in Phoenix, Arizona, passed away unexpectedly due to a tragic incident on October 19th. Savannah had a deep passion for music. She found immense pleasure in reading, especially when sharing stories with her daughter Zoe. She is survived by her daughter Zoe Poteet of Lubbock, Texas, her partner Stephen Warren of Midland, her mother Crystal Calloway of Midland, Texas, her father Cody Jolly of Munns Park, Arizona, her grandparents Gary and Edith Calloway of Lubbock, Texas, and Lisa and Russell Stokes of Prescott, Arizona, her great-grandparents Mike and Julie Jolly of Angel Fire, New Mexico, her sister Samara Corin Ladruca Anderson of Bullhead City, Arizona, and Uncle Christopher and Aunt Aleja Calloway of Liberty, Texas. Savannah is remembered by her partner's family, Stephen's mother, Martina Warren, his father and stepmother, David and Pam Warren, and his brothers, Anthony and Landon. A celebration of life will be held on Wednesday, November 13th at 1 p.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens, 6800 South Highway 349, Midland, Texas. Food and fellowship will follow from 2:30 to 4:30 at 710 West Ohio in Midland, Texas. Larry Merle Mercer, age 70, passed away on Thursday, October 24th in Midland, Texas, after a two-year battle with cancer. He was born in 1953 in Pampa, Texas, to Merle Lloyd Mercer and Callie Naoma Birgit Mercer, and was the younger brother to Vicky and, at age 5, became big brother to Nancy. Larry grew up in Skeleton, Texas, where he attended elementary school, and graduated from White Deer High School in 1972. Larry's working career began at age 17 when he worked at the Carson County feedlot near Pampa while still in high school. He became a cowboy in working ranches in the Texas Panhandle. Larry went to Frank Phillips College to learn welding, after which time he worked on pipelines in Kansas and Oklahoma. Larry loved planes and flying and earned his pilot license when he was 27 years old. Later, he and Susie bought a pipeline patrol business, renaming it LM Air Patrol. He also served for several years as a member of the board of directors of Midland Memorial Hospital. Larry is survived by Susie, his devoted wife of nearly 31 years, his son Sloan Mercer of Rockford, Illinois, daughter Laren Mercer Sullivan of Midland, as well as several stepchildren, 15 grandchildren, and 10 great-grandchildren. He is also survived by sisters Vicky Mercer Brown of Fort Worth and Nancy Mercer of Ruidoso. Visitation will be Friday, November 8th, from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at Colonial Bible Church, 6112 Highway 349 in Midland. Memorial service will be held Saturday, November 9th at 2 p.m. at Colonial Bible Church. In lieu of flowers, donations may be given to Colonial Bible Church Building Fund, Post Office Box 7046 Midland, Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Walt's Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwalsh.com. Cora Lee Harris passed away on October 30th. She was born January 17, 1944, to Tonolia and Eva Craig in Marquez, Texas. She lived in Marquez, Texas, where she attended school. She moved to Midland, Texas in 1961. Cora was employed with the Kennedys for 28 years. She was preceded in death by her parents, Tonolia and Eva Craig, two brothers, J.C. Collins and Freddie Lee Craig, two sisters, Lena Collins and Mary Craig Durham, a nephew, Kevin Levels, as well as her companion, Mitchell E. Lovegreen. She is survived by her son, Jermaine Harris of Midland, Texas, two grandchildren, a sister, Dorothy Hudson, brother-in-law, Jimmy Durham. In keeping with Miss Cora's wishes, cremation services have been arranged. Funeral arrangements are under the care of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Shanta Yvette Thomas, age 41, born in Atlanta, Georgia, passed away on Monday, October 28th, in Midland. Memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, November 15th, at Elevate Church, 200 Baldwin Street in Midland. Rosalie Jane Brown, age 86, of Odessa, passed away on November 2nd in Odessa, Texas. A viewing will be held on November 6th at American Heritage Funeral Home. A funeral service will be held on November 7th at 10 a.m. at Sherwood Baptist Church in Odessa. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by American Heritage Funeral Home of Midland. Evelyn Hoyle, age 58, born in Midland, Texas, passed away on Tuesday, October 29th, in Midland. Celebration of Life will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, November 7th, at Mayberry Funeral Home, 406 East Illinois Avenue in Midland. Helen Anna Ibarra, age 58, passed away on Friday, November 1st, in Midland. Helen will be deeply missed by her family and all those who knew her. Services have been entrusted to Mayberry Funeral Home. Marilyn Mack, age 69, of Midland, passed away on November 4th. Service is pending with Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Enrique S. Tarango, age 68, of Pecos, died Tuesday, November 5th, in Pecos. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, November 9th, at Our Lady of Fatima Catholic Church in Van Horn, Texas. Burial will follow at Van Horn Cemetery. Arrangements are by Heritage Funeral Home of Van Horn, Texas. Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, November 7th. Friends' drunk dials are too much to handle. Dear Abby, I have been friends with a couple for 30 years. Both are alcoholics. They function, work at farmers markets, are sociable, have a house, and pay their bills. Yet, at least once, maybe twice a month, they get totally wasted, and the wife calls me and rambles on incoherently. I suspect they get drunk even more frequently, or thankfully, I don't get a call every time they are on a binge. I have been in terrible relationships in which I drank too much to numb myself. Thankfully, I have been out of such toxicity for years. But I'm having increasing difficulty dealing with these drunken phone calls. I suspect I'm the only person my friend calls because she knows few others would understand her slurred babble. I'm weary from these calls. How do I deflect them? Signed, Tired Ear in Arizona. Dear Tired Ear, put an end to those calls by being frank with your friend about the effect they have on you. Do this while she is sober. Tell her you do not want her calling you after she has been drinking, because her speech is so slurred that you can't understand what she's saying. Say if it happens again, you will hang up the phone, and if it does, follow through. Let her calls go to voicemail. If you would like to maintain any sort of relationship with this couple, see them socially only when they are reasonably sober. Dear Abby, when I was a teenager, my immigrant grandparents brought back hand-knit sweaters from Ireland, the country in which they were born, for everyone in our family. I cherish mine and take care of it, even though I've outgrown it. Years later, a close friend asked to borrow the sweater for her neighbor's child, who needed something Irish for a show-and-tell event at school. The kids were asked to bring items that had to do with Ireland. When I refused to loan my heirloom sweater, my friend told me she'd already promised her neighbor she could borrow it. She became very angry, accused me of being selfish, and hasn't spoken to me for a couple of months. We live in the same town, so I run into her sometimes. She's cordial, but distant, and clearly still upset with me. Bear in mind that I hardly know my friend's neighbor, the one who wanted to borrow my sweater for her child. But even if I did, I wouldn't loan this heirloom to anyone. Was I wrong? Signed, Sentimental in Michigan. Dear Sentimental, you were neither selfish nor wrong. Your friend was out of line. She should never have promised anyone the use of property that wasn't hers. And for her to ice you now for refusing to give it to her and risk that something so precious to you could be damaged is plenty nervy. My advice is to follow her example. Be cordial but distant, and do not permit her to make you the bad guy for saying no. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Oil Report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, November 9th. Railroad Commission seeks to ensure enough funds for well plugging. The story was written by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. A combination of rising incidents and rising costs has prompted the Railroad Commission to request an additional $100 million in emergency well plugging funds and to create an underground injection well investigation team. The issue of emergency well pluggings, such as some wells with uncontrolled water flows, goes beyond those seen in West Texas this year, said Christy Craddock, chairman of the Railroad Commission. Quote, this is statewide. It's not only wells in West Texas. We have them all over the state and in the Bay as well, she told the Reporter-Telegram. The agency had sent its legislative appropriations request for the next biennium, which is fiscal years 2026-27, in August. Craddock said she, her fellow commissioners, and commission staff assessed the budget and decided to request the additional funding to ensure enough funding to plug wells amid a rising number of emergency well pluggings. Quote, we have a vibrant industry with lots going on, she said. She added the additional funding would help commission staff better understand and address the emergencies. Another issue has been the rising cost of plugging wells, as well as consolidation that has left fewer companies available to plug wells, Craddock said. Quote, when we started getting additional state funding to plug orphaned wells 8 years ago, the average cost was $15,000 to plug a well. Today, that cost has doubled or tripled. We've been hit with inflation like everyone else, she said. The request made to the Legislative Budget Board also includes $2.7 million to fund the equivalent of 10 full-time jobs to form an underground injection well investigation team as part of the agency's ongoing work studying and taking action on subsurface pressure from produced water injection. For example, earlier this year, the agency began requesting additional information to demonstrate that fluids are going to be confined from operators requesting injection pressure above a certain threshold in the Delaware Mountain Group. The injection well investigation team would further help the Commission's internal work assessing and evaluating situations such as surface water flows or seismic events. In addition, the additional funding would free up funds appropriated for orphan well plugging to plug non-emergency high-priority wells on the list before they become expensive emergency well pluggings. It's all part of the effort to educate legislators about the agency's efforts and its needs, Craddock said. Quote, we get a good response. People understand plugging is a priority, she said. 2 years ago, Texas became the first in the nation to plug wells using federal funds under the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Texas received $82.5 million out of $560 million awarded to 24 states. This was the first allocation from $4.7 billion dedicated to a new federal orphan oil and gas well remediation and plugging program under the Act. Quote, the federal program is not as easy to access as we would have liked, Craddock said. We are working through the program. It's not as vibrant as we had hoped, but we are trying to access the federal funds, end quote. SMS says success in Dean Formation will spur more wells. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. SM Energy is getting a first look at results in its Klondike area in southern Dawson County and likes what it sees. Quote, we have 8 wells online, all Dean wells, of which 2 have reached peak 30-day initial potential rates, company executives reported during its third quarter earnings call. Quote, the first 2 wells averaged 918 barrels of oil equivalent per well at a very high 93% oil cut. We are pleased to see early results coming in a little stronger than our acquisition model, officials said during the call. The first 2 Klondike wells had an average lateral length of approximately 11,500 feet. Completion of the 8 wells confirmed oil-saturated sandstone and the conventional nature of the play in line with the company's geologic modeling. Given the confidence gained in the oil productivity here, the company has moved a rig back on location and will spud another 6 wells at Klondike by year end, according to SM Energy officials. Officials told analysts during the earnings call that initial wells targeting the Woodford Barnett in the Sweetie Peck area continued to perform well, with cumulative oil production exceeding the peer average in the area to date by more than 50%. Diamondback Energy swaps assets with TRP Energy. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Having absorbed Endeavor Energy Resources, Diamondback Energy is stepping even deeper into its Midland Basin holdings. In announcing its third quarter results earlier this week, the company revealed it has agreed to an asset swap with TRP Energy, in which Diamondback will trade certain Delaware Basin assets and pay approximately $238 million in cash to TRP in exchange for TRP's Midland Basin assets. The deal is expected to close by year's end. In a letter to shareholders, Travis Stice, chairman of the board and chief executive officer, said the trade was rooted in the newly combined Diamondback Endeavor acreage, quote, that has given us the flexibility to look at different opportunities across the Permian Basin," end quote. Stice wrote that the swap with TRP, quote, "allows us to play offense in our backyard by swapping a PDP-heavy asset in the Delaware Basin for a Midland Basin asset with more near-term development potential," end quote. TRP's Midland Basin assets are made up of about 15,000 net acres across Upton and Reagan counties and consist of 55 remaining undeveloped operated locations, the majority of which immediately compete for capital. It also includes 18 drilled uncompleted wells, or DUCs, that provide for additional capital allocation flexibility. In exchange, TRP is receiving Diamondback's Vermejo asset and the cash. Quote, "We will also continue to look for ways to improve our asset base, whether it be through traditional trades to be able to drill longer laterals and increase operated working interest, or out-of-the-box ideas such as TRP," Stice wrote in his letter. Endeavor Acquisition Update. Stice also offered shareholders an update on Diamondback's $26 billion acquisition of Endeavor. Since closing the Endeavor acquisition on September 10th, the combined teams have worked quickly toward a seamless integration, onboarding more than 1,000 employees and moving over 650 combined offices, he wrote in his letter to shareholders. He continued that the teams have already begun sharing best practices. Quote, "At a high level, we have essentially merged two teams of basin experts. While we were once competitors, we can now share best practices and learnings from years of drilling and completing wells in the Midland Basin with what we believe is more combined data and basin experience than any competitor. This is a synergy that could not be modeled in our spreadsheet when the deal was announced, but I am confident this will accrue to the benefit of our stockholders in short order," he wrote. He told shareholders the company is ahead of schedule in delivering the operational synergies promised in conjunction with the merger. The drilling and completions teams have already implemented the two most significant operational synergies, clear fluids for drilling and simulfrac for completions. All Diamondback development in the fourth quarter will be executed with simulfrac completion crews, with spot crews to be used for single well tests like the Barnett Shale in the Midland Basin. On the drilling side, quote, "As of today, all of our rigs are operating with clear fluid drilling systems, and we have already seen wells on legacy Endeavor acreage drilled below post-synergy expected cost per lateral foot," end quote. Stice noted that at the time the merger agreement was announced, Diamondback promised to drill and complete wells for $625 per lateral foot in 2025 on Endeavor's acreage. "I can say that today, in real time and 2 months post-announcement, we are averaging $600 per lateral foot across the combined company, above expectations and ahead of schedule," end quote.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.